Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here for Monday. Appreciate you tuning in. I have a guest across the way as driving down from Olney. You going to stop by and see your dad, by the way, while you're in town? Does he even know you're coming to town?
He does know I'm coming to town. I actually called him when I was...
Take him to breakfast or something?
Well, I don't know.
He's probably already eaten breakfast.
I'm sure he has. But when I was pulling into the parking lot, I was on the phone with him and telling him that I was going to be on the show. So in case I'm sure he tunes in and listens to you
regularly. Oh, yeah, just in case
regularly,
he might not have
but
been.
But just in case, just to say, you know, there's not one of Bruce's most interesting guests, but at least I'll be on the show this morning.
Chris, you've been here before. You are the most interesting guest I have on the show.
Well, no, I was listening to your show on Thanksgiving morning.
Oh, really?
And
I wasn't here. Well, I was.
You
here.
Were here
yeah,
because
here,
you had yeah. the gentleman that is the guitarist for the Charlie Daniels band
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I texted you and thought, it's about time you got an interesting guest on your on your show. But a lot of them are, but that was really good. That was really interesting.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. And now you're going to bring down the interesting guests in the show, the level down. Ladies
right.
and gentlemen, please welcome... And I've been getting both halves of this wrong. Forever and ever, he's been the principal at East Richland High School. He's no longer either of those things. Now the assistant superintendent at Richland County High School.
Well, the Richland County School District.
Richland County School District.
Right.
So are you Olney High School? Are you Richland County High School?
We go by a lot of different names.
You know how you'll really tell? How you tell what you're going to be going by? Is what are you going to, whenever you buy a next school bus, what are you going to put on the side?
The school bus will say Richland County Community Unit School District Number 1.
All right,
They're long buses, so that all that will all
you,
of that will fit.
What are you
there.
Putting across the cheerleaders' uniforms?
Tigers.
See, you know,
that's why, because then you don't have to. But actually, officially, what took place in our school district, Richland County had two different school districts. There
right.
was the East Richland School
right.
District.
West Richland.
And then West Richland and Noble.
Was Noble the only town in the West Richland District, or was there anything else?
Well, I mean, if
maybe
you
the
get
part
into
of Wynoos,
to that area.
Of Wayne
yeah,
County.
Wynoos. Actually, the school district, the Richland County School District actually extends into the very northeastern
yeah.
corner of Wayne County.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had West Richland and East Richland, and West Richland annexed into the East Richland School District when they closed.
Right.
So last year, the first year of the annexation, it was actually still considered the East Richland School District. But officially on July 1st, the name changed.
Why did you wait a year just to see if it was going to take?
No, it wasn't that. But you would be amazed at what is involved in changing the name of the school district.
I can imagine that.
Oh, well, the bureaucracy of all of the state level of with the State Board of Education and everything that was involved. It's
well,
not
yeah,
something
you know,
that you just on a whim say, hey, let's change our name.
And
there
you know
is
you
a
were,
lot
you're
involved.
Bringing in 150, 200 kids or something probably from Noble, right? Or
actually no, it was
more.
Yeah, it was K-12,
that.
So it was probably about 350 to 400, 350 or 400 were the number that came in from West Richland.
That you're bringing in a new, and you want to make sure that they don't, you want them to feel welcome, so they're not coming to East Richland. You want to welcome their school. I can see why you go about the change.
Right, and it does, and certainly. Not something that was without its share of controversy. Anytime you change the name of anything, but I have to say that through the entire process, it went just the best we could have possibly hoped that it was going to
Since
go.
Since you've changed it then to Richland County from East Richland, you could have taken the opportunity. You said that the cheerleaders will still have tigers on their chest.
They might say only, too. I don't know what the cheerleaders have
you
on
You really
there.
Could have taken the opportunity to change the name. The mascot.
Oh, yes. Well, that wasn't going to happen. No. And the orange and black was going to remain.
How
so
come?
With all of
I am
with
just
all
astonished
of those things,
that Olney has never embraced the obvious mascot.
the white squirrel?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know that that's ever been brought up in any serious conversations.
Yeah.
In jest at times, if you know somebody new, because, Olney, home of the white squirrels.
Yeah,
what's
sure.
your school mascot?
Yeah, white squirrels.
But no, that does not strike fear into the heart of the opponent. I mean, can you imagine growing up, we had our share of good-natured ribbing of being the mules
yeah.
from time to time.
Yeah, just a little.
And what would you think if it was the white squirrel, the fighting
great.
White squirrels?
I think it'd be great.
The rabid white squirrels, maybe. That's what we would, I don't know. But it was, But that did not change. It's still orange.
I saw a white squirrel up there this summer.
So if you think of the high school, the high school is Richland County High School, home of the Olney Tigers.
I see. Okay.
And still orange and black.
But it's that's the EHS, OHS,
RHS. Well, there was actually some talk even
RCHS.
It's RCHS is the school, the high school. There was a lot of different options of things to consider, but it's now Richland County Community Unit School District number 1. It's a countywide school district.
See, the reason I ask and the reason I make a fuss about it is because I deal with schedules.
Sure.
And I have to put schedules. I have to put schedules on the websites and that kind of thing. And one person will have it. The one person sends me a schedule. It's Olney. One person sends me a schedule. It's East Richland High School. All the girls tennis teams or whatever were playing East Richland High School, even though it's not that anymore. And always wonder where that is.
Well, and one of the things that people may not realize too, when you go through a change like that, you still find plenty of things around Olney and throughout the school district that still say East Richland High School or East Richland School District. Because just the process of changing a name like that is something that, for years you'll probably continue to see some things because it's a very expensive process. Just think about the expense of a bus fleet that we have that's going to cover an entire county and the number of buses and the bus routes that you have.
Richland is not a terrifically small county, is it?
No, it's not. It's a fairly good-sized county. And as you just the expense that you might have in changing the lettering on a bus or
on buses.
Yeah, on
not
buses.
A bus is.
Right. So, and then as you get into athletic uniforms and things like that, so people have to understand, and we really tried to communicate that with the public. That
takes time.
This is something that will take time, but we did really believe, and our Board of Education really believed that that it was going to be something that was necessary for us to really pull together all of the groups that we really needed with the annexation, that we were starting new. And as a countywide school district now, it's the Richland County School
When you brought in the other kids, when you brought in the extra 400 kids in the K-12, were you able to fit them into your classrooms, or do you need to build on, or how are you guys doing up there with the class size?
Well, originally, an elementary building remained open in Noble. It was a K-5 building, but that actually closed, and now all the elementary students, pre-K through grade 5, go to the elementary school in Olney, which is actually just about probably a half a mile from my house and where my wife works, and so it's convenient. But all the elementary students go there, pre-K through grade 5. So there's some they're bursting at the seams for sure when you start looking at that. But they're making things work, and there's a portable building that is coming over from Noble that is going to help with alleviate some of the stress there is from just the additional number of students that are there.
How many kids in the high school now then? At
around 720.
Give or take, you pushing kids out the door.
Well, I'm not in that role anymore, so I'm not the one doing it. But around 720 right now is the number. But if you look at it from the high school, if you talk to the people that have been there for a long time, I mean, when you and I were in high school, for example, there were probably 1,000 to 1,100 students at East Richland High School.
At Olney, yeah.
In fact, one of the things I always find interesting, I was reading in the Wayne County Press just not too long ago, well, I guess it was actually earlier this fall, the headlines from years gone by.
Right.
It's amazing what I remember from 35 years ago.
It's just terrible.
Those 35, I don't remember the 50-year-ago headlines yet, but the 35 years ago. And I think I remember seeing that over the last couple of years, the enrollment at Fairfield High School was around 700.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just interesting to see how the enrollments have declined throughout.
That was when Bill Garrett was, God bless him, asking folks to come into the office and suggesting if they were going to drop out, do it now.
Well, that...
Which is legend. That may or may not be true.
I don't know whether anything like that ever took place or not, but I heard some of those
same
stories.
We've heard the stories.
But actually, as you look at the enrollment, and the students have been terrific with the annexation, and I have to say this, because last year, in our first year with the annexation, I was still serving as a high school principal. So what I can tell you is that the high school gained about 100 students from Noble, and 5 teachers, and the students almost to a person, immediately were acclimated into the school.
Welcomed with open arms.
They were, and you couldn't, it's not as if the students from Noble, we stamped an N on their forehead.
Yeah.
They made blended
fun of
in
them, called
they,
them Wildcats.
They blended in really well and actually got involved in all kinds of different activities, and in fact were in some leadership positions as far as student organizations.
That's great.
And the teachers were terrific. Many of them were ones that I'd already worked with before because I had taught over there for 9 years. So some of the teachers were ones I'd worked for, and I knew they're professionals and did a really good job. So. And that's happened throughout the school district. So it's been a really good process, and in fact, one that has gained some interest throughout the state. In fact, just not too long ago, the Lieutenant Governor, Evelyn Sanguinetti, was at our school.
Really?
And talking about this, a very nice lady. She was visiting our school because one of her tasks is to kind of look at how efficiencies can be gained throughout the state and looking at the process of annexation. So one of the things that we really mentioned to her was that if educators always say that we want to keep the best interest of students in mind,
sure,
but they don't always do that.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular case, I think that was the real takeaway, was that through all of this, we really wanted to keep our eye on the fact that we want to do what was best for students.
Yeah.
And if you keep that first and foremost in your mind, then you generally do make the best decisions, even though they may sometimes not be particularly popular. They might be decisions that are difficult, but ultimately the right decisions are made if you're making them based on the best interests of students.
We got Chris Simpson here. He's the assistant principal at the Richland County High School.
Assistant superintendent.
What did I say, assistant principal?
Assistant principal.
I downgraded you again, didn't I?
That's okay.
Assistant superintendent.
I'll do a lot of different
things. I'm waiting to see what assistant superintendent actually does.
Well, my wife is the elementary school librarian, so I'm also the elementary assistant librarian. So I do a lot of different things.
Wearing all kinds of hats. We'll be back on the Bruce Dickey Show after these. Back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey. Appreciate you joining in today. My guest across the way is the assistant superintendent for Richland County High Schools. It's Chris Simpson, and former Fairfield boy. We've been talking about all the things. All right, now, we kind of left the folks wondering the same thing I'm wondering. What exactly does an assistant superintendent do?
Well, there's no set job description in a particular school district.
Okay.
So a lot of your job falls into if you ever read a job description at all.
I'm not asking you to interview for your job.
Right. Other duties is assigned. There's always that one little feature.
Yeah.
But actually, my role primarily would center around four or five things. One is a big part of it is the Title I director, which Title I is a large federal grant.
Sure.
That brings in quite a bit of money to the school district, and it's primarily in kindergarten through fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Another big part of it is dealing with assessment and the assessment systems throughout your school district. Also, then a lot of it is working with the principals in the schools. And,
how many are
and
there?
Working. Administrative team is about nine.
Yeah.
For that, because you also have a special ed director, right. Early childhood, and those, and so. So working with the principals and the rest of the administrative team. And another area then, too, is just really focusing on the teaching and learning process, mm-hmm. curriculum and instruction and those areas. So all areas that I'm interested in working with. But the downside to that is that you're out of the daily routine of the school. And I thought I would miss this part of it, but I've learned that I really do miss this part of it, is just the daily interaction with students, and that's the part that I really miss.
Your office is still at school, right?
Well, it's actually behind the high school. There's a white building behind the high school, so it's detached.
So you don't see kids at all?
Well, if I seek out opportunities to see them, which I do, but that's a big part of it, as opposed to your role in as a principal, you're seeing students on a regular basis.
Now, as part of your job as assistant superintendent, you have dubbed yourself the something else, right?
Well, I've dubbed myself the director of public relations.
Yes,
I've made myself that. So that really, actually, one of the parts of that is it gives me the opportunity to go out and into the schools and do different things, because there's so many. Part of the main purpose for looking at that with the PR is that people have a false view of what happens within schools, and a lot of social media is a big part of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes the story that's told about what happens in schools is not always the true story.
Yeah.
Chris, or maybe it's a sensationalized story.
Chris, how have you been able to get over your shyness?
It's been a lifelong struggle.
Yeah,
it's been a lifelong struggle.
Yeah,
but one of the things then with the PR is I've created this a system. I call it Stories from School. And what they are is they're short little video clips that I put on our YouTube channel. And the idea is then to promote this and try to use social media as a way to really tell the story of what's happening within the schools. And it's really an opportunity for me also to be in the schools, because it is easy if you're in a district office type role to be busy with the things within your office and not have an opportunity to get out into the schools. Because the really exciting thing is what happens in the classroom between teachers and students. And that's really where the magic is, and that's what you want to capture.
And, have you been – you're not just capturing sports or something like these.
Oh, no. It's – well, as an example, I mentioned before when Ms. Sanguinetti was in our school district, that was one of the stories from school. But also things that are happening – try to actually stay away from the athletic side of things, because that already gets a lot of attention.
Right.
Now, having said that, there was a story from school as a fall sports preview, because – and, like, things with homecoming was one of the stories from school. But it might be an activity with middle school language arts, or it was a second grade math activity that was happening. So there could be any of number of those things.
As part of this also, do you ever get the opportunity to, like, I know, to meet with other cultures or anything like that? I'm leading into that direction.
Well, one of the things that I did with social media was when we had a cultural exchange program. We have an ongoing cultural exchange program with a school in Germany.
Really?
And, that was – the school is called Gars Gymnasium, or we would say gymnasium.
Yeah.
Apparently the word gymnasium there has a little bit different meaning than it does here.
I didn't know that.
This the gymnasium. Anyway, the name of the school is Gars Gymnasium.
It's in where?
Gars, Germany, which is southern Germany. It's in Bavaria.
How far from Munich?
It's about 1 hour directly east of Munich.
Okay.
So we've had this ongoing exchange program
near Nuremberg.
Gars. No, not too close to that. It's very rural. It's a rural area. In fact, Bavaria, the southern part of Germany, is very much like southern Illinois.
Yeah.
But
except with trees.
No, not there. I mean, it's just very rural, very agricultural.
You didn't see the Black Forest?
Well, the Black Forest was a distance away, but actually, and then the Alps were, you could see the Alps as you were looking there if the day was clear.
Yeah.
One of the fun trips that we did make was we went down into Berchtesgaden, the Eagle's Nest.
Oh, really?
With, of course, where Hitler was during World War II and the bunker complex that existed there. But one of the things that occurred with that, just to give you a little bit of background on the cultural exchange program, Marilyn Holt, who was our superintendent for the past 13 years, was really the catalyst for this with some connections that she had. Because in Olney, there's a – there's a strong German connection that exists, largely, I think, from the bicycle industry. And,
really?
And there's a
from
a
the
connection,
AMF type of stuff?
Right, but also there's a lot with beyond that with the bicycle industry and connections with Germany. So there are a number of people that live in Olney that have German hair or are actually from Germany and living in the United States and living in Olney, and they came here. Expatriates are in this area. So through that, there was a connection then with a person that was the principal at this Gars Gymnasium. And through that, it evolved into this opportunity for a cultural exchange. So we went in June, and I actually had the opportunity to go this year with 20 students.
20 kids.
20 high school students. My daughter was one of them, so that was a fun part of it.
Sure.
And the year prior, we hosted a girl. We had 24 students from their school that came to our school. So what happens is this was our third trip of taking students each year. It's each time we've gone, it's gained in numbers. Mrs. Holt, I mentioned, our superintendent that just retired, took the first group of students. And then we had a second group that went, and then this was our third time going in June. And they'll be coming back in March, bringing 20 to 24 students in March.
Were you over there?
For 2 weeks.
Really?
For 2 weeks. So it's a
cultural
exchange.
Were the kids going to school?
They did go to school, yeah. It's interesting because from an educator standpoint, it's just really interesting to look at the contrast in the educational system that exists in Germany as it is in the United States. But with the exchange, our students are going to school, and one of the things that they like to use our students for while they're there is just conversational English.
Sure, sure.
Because they begin taking English classes in the fifth grade. And the students, in fact, that come over here, of course, they're very fluent in English. But they like to use our students for conversational English, and they're going into classrooms and speaking to students, and just the difference in speaking English to a native English speaker as opposed to others. Their students, when they come to our school, they love to come to our school because it is so much different than their school.
You got a pizza place right next door.
Well, there's that, but also when you start looking at career and technical education, education in the arts, physical education, some of those types of things are really not area that they have. Well, it's mostly more what you would consider core academic areas.
Really?
It's not as if they don't have some of those things. But it's just a different type of structure. Plus the fact that when you go to school there in grade 5 in Germany, you branch off into one of three different areas. In the case, the school that we work with, the gymnasium, is the top level of education. So you have to actually test into that type of school.
Oh, really?
So it's a much different type of educational.
I've always kind of wondered also, and I know that their sports don't really work like ours do. You know, we've got three seasons in high school level sports. You got the football or volleyball. You've got basketball and wrestling, and then you've got the spring sports, baseball and track. In Germany, they don't really have school sports, do they? Is it all clubs over there?
It is all club sports. Yeah, there are no sports teams that are affiliated with their schools.
With the schools,
yeah. In fact, their school day.
That's the same way throughout Europe.
Now, I don't know about throughout Europe, but probably I would think that that's the case. But
so you mentioned that they don't really stress physical education.
Well, no, I wouldn't say they don't stress physical education, but
that's how
they don't. They don't.
That's what I understood you to say.
No, they do have physical education, but it's. A different type of physical education program than you would find here, and not on a daily basis.
No dodgeball.
I didn't see any dodgeball being played when I was there.
Well, they got team handball too. I mean, maybe they play team handball. That's kind of like dodgeball.
Well, but their sports programs are exclusively club sports that are outside of the school. In fact, their school day goes from 8 to 1.
Oh,
so
really?
So 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Really not just like a 20-minute break at one point. Students might bring a sandwich to eat. So it's just a really interesting contrast to what we have, plus their school year.
Concentrated, kind of.
It is, and their school school year ends. We were there in mid-June. Their school year ends in July, actually the early part of July, but, of course, they don't start till September sometime probably as well. So.
Huh.
So it's a very different thing.
I was wondering if you were there in June, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It was actually towards the end of what would be their high school graduation. Their seniors were about to graduate, but the rest of their students were going to be in school
through
July. We did not have prom, no.
You did not go over there to prom?
We did not go to prom. Well, I didn't go to prom.
Well, I didn't figure you might get invited.
But it was...
Maybe your daughter might
have
been
there. It was interesting to see the contrast in the educational system. But also the cultural aspect of it was... Some of the things that were happening that I observed in the time that I was there. And keep in mind that our students are living with host families during that time. So... The idea is that for that short period of time that you're immersed in the culture, you're going to school with the student, you're doing what they normally do. Same way when their students come to Alney and they're living with a host family. We hosted a girl that lived with us. And then when we went over this past year, my daughter stayed with her family. And,
well, that's
and
nice.
So, yeah, you form that connection. So
where did you stay?
I actually stayed in a town called Mooseham. In a hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was in kind of like a little inn in this town of Mooseham, which was probably, 15 miles or whatever they measured in kilometers.
Nice.
from the school.
Were you able to get on the Autobahn?
I did get on the Autobahn on a couple of different occasions.
Did you drive on the Autobahn?
Yes, I was driving. Yes, and what you find on the Autobahn is that there are some parts of the Autobahn that are unlimited speed, and there are other parts that are restricted.
Not. Yeah.
So yes, I did have a chance as we were going down to Berchtesgaden, the area in the Alps. Then I did have a chance to drive on the Autobahn for a while.
You realize that you probably
scared me to death.
I was going to say, you realize you probably weren't licensed either, were you?
Oh, I did. Yes, you have a license for it. Yeah, it was. Right. And it was, but yeah, scary. It was.
Were you getting passed all the time?
I did my share of passing, but I also got passed quite a bit. Yeah,
That's the interesting thing. Whenever I was over there 5 years ago, and we drove on the Autobahn quite a bit also. And, you really begin to notice and pay attention to how well your car's put together.
Well, I said it scared me to death. I don't know that it scared me to death as much as it did the two teachers that were with me.
Oh, is that right?
That were my passengers. I think they were probably more terrified than I was. But one of the things that just with the cultural aspect of it that I found interesting when the issues that they're dealing with in Bavaria, and again, it's a very rural area. Fracking was one of the things.
Oh, really?
I had a conversation with some of the parents of the students because fracking is a big issue that is happening over there.
Are they doing it yet or trying to do it?
Well, it's very controversial, very very much like it is here. There are people on both sides of that issue. Also, one of the things, because it is a very rural area, agricultural-based type of economy in many of the parts of Bavaria, but also they're very small farms, so a big issue for them are the genetically modified crops, and they have is a controversial thing. And one day when we were in Munich, there was a large demonstration happening in Munich about legalization of marijuana. So some of the issues are about the same in
worldwide,
Germany,
aren't they?
As they are in Illinois.
I'll be doggone. I did not realize. Now tell me, you said that they're sending some people over here. Are you going to be sending some? Are you sending another crew back there next year?
It would be actually summer of 2017. Oh, yes, okay. That we would. So there's a couple of years in between. So their students will be coming here in March of 2016. They were here in March of 2014.
I see.
And one of the things that is different also, of course, their students are fluent in English,
right,
and speak English really well. Our students are not fluent in German.
Do you teach German?
We do not teach German. That's one of the questions that oftentimes is asked because we have this exchange. And the German people will tell you, why would you teach German? Everybody speaks English. So it's very – and also the fact that we live in the United States. And, of course, if you're going to teach a foreign language, then certainly Spanish is the most obvious one to take. But I have to tell you that what I did in preparation – for my trip to Germany was I just watched a bunch of reruns of Hogan's Heroes.
That makes sense. That makes a ton of sense. That makes a ton of sense.
So that helped with the conversational
you knew where
German
Dusseldorf
that was going to take place.
That's great. I've got Chris Simpson here. He's the assistant superintendent at Richland County High School. We'll be back in just a bit.
Pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout. He started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what the mama saw, it was against the law. Who the mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey. I'm joined this morning by Chris Simpson. He's the assistant superintendent of the Richland County School District. I'm going to get that right. I can't believe that you're getting fussy with me by saying that wrong.
I'm not getting fussy with you.
You got fussy with
that's
me,
that's just, I just want your listeners to be informed and know the...
Speaking of informed.
Yes.
I am informed, and I checked it out online, and I saw it, and it's very impressive, the Newsweek thing. Tell everybody about the proclamation by Newsweek.
From Newsweek? Yeah, we're really excited about it and proud and of the recognition, but each year Newsweek comes out with their top 500 high schools in the United States. And by the way,
where does that come from?
Well, they have a criteria that they look at in a formula that includes a number of different factors, looking at graduation rates, test scores on nationally normed tests like ACT and SAT, looking at programs like advanced placement, international baccalaureate, in a case like in Olney or even Fairfield High School, dual credit opportunities for students, because mostly we're not looking at AP or international baccalaureate. It's more of a dual credit arrangement with a local community college. So looking at a variety of factors such as that. And by the way, it's the number, looking at public schools throughout the United States, how many public schools would you guess there are in the United States?
Oh, gosh. High schools. Let's go with 20,000.
Well, that's a pretty good guess. The answer is I have no idea. No, actually, it depends on the number that you look at. But according to Newsweek in their article, it's over 26,000.
Oh, okay.
But when you look at some other publications, and sometimes you get into issues as to how do you define a public school and some of those types of things.
That'd be about 400 per state.
Yeah. So you're but anywhere from 26 up to 29,000 are some of the estimates. Yeah. So the top 500 high schools is a really good recognition. Now, what we received actually was not top 500, but they have another criteria where they call it beating the odds. Because in beating the odds, what they do is they try to then level those criteria that I mentioned before based on some other social factors, the primary one being your poverty rate and your number of students that are at or below that level. Because as it has been for many, many years and continues to be, the number one indicator of student academic success actually is socioeconomic status. Yeah. Because generally students that are at a lower socioeconomic level tend to perform less well on some of those types of tests. In fact, that's one of the areas to really try to address, is to level that playing field. So as you begin to look at that, and they have another category called beating the odds. And that was the category that we were part of, the top 500 beating the odds, looking at your student demographic information and then how your students are performing on those criteria I mentioned before. And that put us in the top 500 nationally and actually in the top 21 through the state of Illinois.
Really?
So we're very happy of that and proud of that accomplishment and that recognition. And I would say this too, that and this is not false modesty on my part, because you've known me for a long time, Bruce, and you know that's not
quality. Typically something that we run into. Typically something that you're prone to.
But I mentioned before, as we were talking about my role as assistant superintendent and what happens in the classroom between teachers and students, and that's where the really important thing happens, and I think that's really a reflection of the work that happens in our school with our teachers and the students and the work that they do, because that's really where the magic happens. And I would say that as you and I could look back on our experiences at good old FCHS, that's where the really important things were taking place, and that's where they're happening there now too, is in the classroom and the instruction that occurs between the teacher and the student. So it's an area that I think that it was a recognition that we shared, and we'd really tried to share it throughout the community, because it's not just something that happens at the high school. Certainly your elementary and middle school teachers have a role in that, and your entire community has a role in that. So, but we're proud of it. Like to pat ourselves on the back for that.
I want to pat you on the back too.
Okay.
Because you, nice job. You just spoke for like 2.5 minutes without me having to say a word. It was great.
Well, I was prepared to go longer, but you were giving me the sign like,
no, I wasn't.
Finish it up. Okay.
Tell me a little bit. I had a question. You had the, you were talking to me earlier. There's some new legislation just went through.
There is
affecting not just Dalton. It'll affect everybody.
It will affect everyone. The most recent, well, it happened actually last week, was the president signed the new law. It's called Every Student Succeeds Act. It replaces No Child Left Behind.
ESSA. And
I don't know if that's what they're going to call it or not, but okay. No Child Left Behind was NCLB. And then you had, just as a brief history lesson, if you'll indulge me for a moment.
You got like 6 minutes.
Okay, good. Well, I might need more.
I know it.
But actually, a lot of people may not realize that the legislation goes back to the 1960s with President Lyndon Johnson, was when the Elementary and Secondary Education Act first came into play. And they thought that, some people I think maybe believe that President Bush with No Child Left Behind was the kind of when this whole thing first began. But it actually goes back to the 60s. And it's really this most recent Every Student Succeeds Act that was signed is actually just an update of that original legislation going back to, I think it was 1965. The main difference in this and what made No Child Left Behind difficult for schools and somewhat controversial was there was such an emphasis on testing.
Right.
And the hope is that, and as you read through, of course, I haven't read word for word the Every Student Succeeds Act because it's who knows how many pages.
It'll be disseminated.
The highlights of it is that there's much less of an emphasis on testing, on just the standardized testing. And it gives more control back to the local and state level, which we're excited about that, and less of what No Child Left Behind seemed to be a punitive type of system established largely by the federal government. And the federal government, because you weren't going to be getting federal funding if you weren't doing these types of things. So it gives more control back at the state level and then also through that to the local level, which I think most of us in education believe that's where the authority should lie, is more state and local.
How long
level.
Does it take to implement these kind of changes, like this, these particular changes? You know, the No Student Left Behind infrastructure, let's call it, it probably took 3 or 4 or 5 years to install, and it's going to be difficult to tear
it
down.
It will, and there were some parts of No Child Left Behind, don't get me, that were very, very good for education and moved us in the right direction. As I mentioned before, the number one indicator of student success continues to be that student's socioeconomic status.
Sure.
And what No Child Left Behind did was it really shined a light on the fact that throughout the United States, whether you talk about a community like Olney, a community like Fairfield, or wherever else, that there are some students that are underserved.
Sure.
And there are some students that need additional support. So No Child Left Behind was really positive in that way, in that it really shined a light on some of those students that needed some additional support, and really put in place a system that required schools to do that, not just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
But the problem with No Child Left Behind was it was also punitive, and you had the state testing system that if you weren't making what they called adequate yearly progress, then you began getting sanctions. And it would suggest that the school was failing and that they were leaving children behind, which certainly was not the case. They were doing a lot of really good work with children, but they were also working at times with children that maybe had English as a second language.
Yeah.
Or in the world we live in today, maybe you're working with children who have a parent, or in some cases two, that are incarcerated, and you have a large number of students that might be homeless or kind of bouncing from place to place. And all of that's certainly going to impact the performance level of a student in school. So moving away from that type of punitive nature with No Child Left Behind to what is we're expecting to see with Every Student Succeeds Act is looking at students' success and how they're performing in school on a number of different measures, not just on one test.
Yeah.
So if you think about you and I in a class, if we took a class and the teacher told us that I'm going to base your grade on a final exam and that's it, we might be thinking, oh, gosh, that may not work very well.
That's okay with me, but it might not work for everybody
right.
else.
So I think I test good.
I test good.
in a lot of the cases, we would like to have, if you're going to assess my performance as a student, you should assess my performance on a variety of factors
that are
relevant to what's happening in the classroom.
That makes more sense.
And that should be the way with schools, too. Yeah. We should evaluate schools and how successful they are on a number of factors.
If the testing system or if it can be devised like that.
Right. So I think
evaluation process.
That's probably the biggest news that's happening in the world of education right now. So that's an important thing.
Let's. I don't have a whole lot of time left. Tell me about the kids. We talked about Michelle a little bit ago. How's Haley?
She's doing well. She's a senior in high school, so we have been...
Have we been searching for schools?
We have. In fact, I was thinking of you and one of your occasional guests, Matt Vaughn, recently.
He's going to be on Friday, by the way.
Really? Well, yeah. I will try to... Yeah. I'll listen to the... Are you still archiving the shows?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
I'll listen to that one. The reason I was thinking of that was because one of the schools that we visited was Knox College in Galesburg,
nice.
Which is a small private liberal arts college, and... The reason I was thinking of that is one of the sites of the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
He was
right there on the campus of Knox College.
That's wonderful.
So I visited the site, sat in the chair, in fact, that Lincoln sat in as he was waiting to go out and have the debate with Stephen Douglas.
Really?
So yeah, it was fascinating. So I was thinking of you and Matt, knowing that you guys are Lincoln aficionados, that you might
find that
interesting.
How's Cole?
Cole's a sophomore. So in fact, with my job change, moving from high school principal to assistant superintendent, probably the two people most thrilled about that change were Haley and Cole, because that way their dad's no longer the principal of their school.
They didn't get to see him anymore. That's great.
So that was they're probably the two that were probably the most excited about. Then our youngest son, Keen, is in seventh grade, so he's still in middle school.
Well, wonderful. Rob, how's the basketball team going to be? How's Rob's basketball team, Rob Flanagan?
The Tigers are off and running this year. We're going to compete hard and play hard. I think we're 3-4 right now.
Had a tough night the other night, didn't you?
Played Breeze Modern Day the other night. They're a handful. They're a handful, that's for sure.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for coming down.
You bet, Bruce. My pleasure.
That's the Bruce Dickey Show for today. Talk to y'all again tomorrow.